I am the night, the terror.
The earth is dying. I did this.
I swear to you, with both the hearts of the last of the Time Lords, I will stop you.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and for the second week in a row, I want to welcome back from the Cultdom Collective, Kirsty. How are you?
I am very good. For those of you who don't know, I'm about to talk about somebody you don't know. Dave Asay sends his regards to all of you, including Clarence, who's not here yet. Come check out the Cultdom Collective podcast. We haven't done anything in a while, but we still sound good. So, and we sound younger in earlier episodes. So
everyone always sounds younger in earlier episodes, which is true.
Isn't that weird?
Weird. Yeah. But I'll tell you what's not weird. The fact that I love saying, welcome back, Lee Shackelford.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm glad to be here and glad to be here with both of you. And we live in faith that Clarence will be coming soon.
Yes, indeed. Stuck in a time window, didn't get dusted, but he's coming, hopefully.
Well, I have so many friends in the military that I just bobbled for a second because his text said that he had a deployment. And I thought, wait, where are you going? He works with computers, man. He writes software. It's that kind of deployment.
He is deploying his software into the hardware. Dun, dun, dun. So it's awesome seeing our friend Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV in the chat, because when I was watching this episode, and I know we'll get into it, I actually thought about her in the opening scenes, because to me, it was all about a snap. We're all getting into it.
Oh, that's true.
I do have just a little bit of news that I want to share. If you are listening to us as of this recording, or you're watching us on the stream more so than listening to us, I encourage you to go out to your podcatcher of choice and check out the Oz9 podcast. Today is the 100th episode anniversary of Oz9. Episode 100 drops, ends with an awesome cliffhanger. I will say that.
It's awesome. Not the last episode of Oz 9.
It is not the last episode of Oz 9, but cliffhanger. Yeah. Lee Shackelford, Pluto, you're here with me.
I
get that Pluto voice really quick?
Well, I noticed that in 99 and 100, the editing has taken on a special sonorance. So my voice has always got a little bit of an effect on it because I'm supposed to be, you know, Greco-Roman god. And, you know, we know their voices echo, right? So
now you really echo.
Now it's really, they've done something. It sounds like it's slowed down a little bit or something. But anyway, that's still me. And narrator two is still there gasping for breath.
Yes, yes. So give me something. How would really, really quick, let's just go back really quick. Since Clarence is not here and I can't introduce him, I just want to, and just for the fun of it.
We'll waste that time instead, yes.
We'll just say, welcome to Oz9, Pluto.
It's a pleasure to be here. Where is my lady?
Where is your lady indeed? Maybe I'm just narrator too.
Oh.
And maybe I could say you've been listening to Lee Shackelford. But all jokes aside, having fun, go check out Oz9 Podcast. It is a hoot. It is so much fun. It is comedy. And if you've listened to Shannon Perry on here, I just want to say, Shannon, it's 100 episodes. Your fault, not my fault. There you go.
And for people who are watching this, you did this art. This is, right? This is sort of based on Lucas Elliott's.
Well, it's actually art. Some of Lucas Elliott's design from the comic. And I blew up one of the panels from the comic and did the 100 episode, dropped in Olivia, and I made it look like she was holding a little
she's
confetti thing. Yeah. So, but yes, go check out Oz9. Tell them Discussing Who sent you. And yes, woohoo.
That's right.
All right. So
links to Colton Collective and Oz9 in the show notes.
Indeed, indeed.
Okay.
So do either of you have any other things before we get into our review?
Feel like we got to do it.
All right.
The chat is already carrying on the conversation.
Yeah, it's already going. it's
fantastic.
So with that being said, if you have not seen Empire of Doom, which I like calling Empire of Death because I still say Empire of Doom, but if you have not seen Empire of Death, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
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 Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Empire of Death. This is the 8th episode of the 2024 series of Doctor Who, first airing / streaming on the 21st and 22nd of June, 2024. It also aired at midnight on the 22nd in UK cinemas. This episode starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. Kirsty, summary view, what say you?
I loved it. I've been watching Doctor Who for, 50 years? Is there anything that's really going to surprise me anymore? But it managed to, because the spoilers we did say, it just turns out that Ruby's normal and so is her mum, and that's actually really brilliant that we all believed the setup. And I think hats off to RTD for doing that, because we do, as fans, we get ourselves into expectation territory, and we made her out to be way bigger than she was. We had some indications, some things that's not really to people's liking being paid off, but I like that even more. It's just like, because it is so difficult to be surprised at anything anymore, and I just loved having the rug pulled out from under me. And then we got the bit at the end, which I'm going to not say anything about until we get to later, because I think you'll probably want to address that separately.
The last episode, there were parts of it that I would just adored, and I was punching the air about things. And some parts I was saying, what's happening? So I don't know. I'm still wavering on my rating. So I'm glad that's not until the end of the episode.
So Lee, I am 100% agreeing with you. Okay. I really enjoyed some aspects of it. I was waiting even until the end for something that I had really anticipated and felt like it was built up and felt like it was happening. And then it didn't happen. And I was kind of, for the first time ever, ticked off at RTD a bit. Mm. So there was something about it. And it wasn't the reveal of the mom, even though I have, you know, we'll talk about that. But there was something else about it that really rubbed me the wrong way and made me just kind of go, I'm not going to be rating this a 5 like I've pretty much rated the majority of everything else, because I can go ahead and say this is not going to be a 5 episode for me. Not saying it was bad, just saying not a 5. So let's talk about something that I made a joke about, referring to Tasha's After the Snap movies and TV channel. I got the vibe of, at the very beginning, Avengers Infinity War. Spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen Avengers Infinity War.
What, Kirsty, that old movie?
Yeah, that old movie.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What do you guys think? Kirsty, did you feel Avengers Infinity War vibe when everybody started dusting?
To be honest, ever since, and it probably came out before that, but it's just been a common effect in Hollywood for, it seems like, the past 10, 15 years, for people to just turn into dust and blow away. I've seen it so many places. It's like, yeah. So I just think in general, it's an overdone effect. Originally the effect was going to be a lot more gruesome at the beginning. There was, like, you could see bones and stuff when the sand fell away, but they just turned it Just went with just all sand instead because it was a little too.
Lee, what about you? Did you just feel the sanding, dusting away was overdone?
Or has it been overdone? And so this is just one more thing, because Janet Ballard Hall is pointing out here too, they did that in The Mummy as well. So it's not just Avengers, but we've kind of seen that effect a lot. And I'm sure there are options, and you could do something that was a lot more frightening. And yeah, I could see why they opted against that. But yeah, I wondered if it isn't sort of a joke, if it isn't sort of the show kind of nudging us in the ribs and saying, hey, look, like in Avengers, you know.
You know, my complaint with it, or my only gripe with it, is the people that you see dying are dusting away, you know, are not dying and dusting away. You That's know true. That every single person from Rose to Colonel, what's his name, to Kate Stewart, you know, going away.
And Carla and Cherry, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, all of those, but the simple fact that you see them dusting away at the very beginning knows there's going to be a reset button at some point, without a doubt.
That was true in Avengers too. You know, I didn't think for a second we're killing off those characters for good. I read the comics. I know how many times Reed Richards has died.
Right. You know,
it's not permanent.
I guess at this point, is it a fair criticism of a show that continually does this anyway?
Well, that's true.
We know that the Doctor keep killing off the title character. Yeah. I mean, how many times has he been aged up to almost ancientness and then revived? And
point taken. But what's the best point is the time window, the memory, our own memory TARDIS has manifested Clarence Brown.
It's just the way I remembered him.
Indeed.
Hey guys, how you
welcome
doing? Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Sorry for being late, but nevertheless happy I'm able to make it here to talk this one out with you guys.
Good deal. Well, we're just going through some reviews, or finishing up some reviews. Clarence Brown, what say you?
Well, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. It's kind of strange. I feel like it did a lot of really good things. I'm going to equate it to a season of Star Trek Discovery that ended in a little child screaming that caused this thing called the burn, which we never talk about. And that, you know, I feel like there were a lot of expectations that were set up that kind of were not fulfilled. Not necessarily a bad thing, but when you're doing all this speculating and you're doing all this, you know, not really research, but you're looking for the hidden parts of the episodes in the season to bring you to a certain conclusion. It is kind of disappointing when it's not what you think. But oftentimes when it's not what you think, you expect it to be way more clever. Also got the Last Jedi vibes on here with the whole you're nobody thing with Ruby Sunday and equating it to Rey a little bit. So yeah,
that's right.
I didn't hate it, but I don't know if I loved it. So maybe you guys can talk me up a little bit.
So I will tell you that Kirsty really, really loved it.
Oh, wow.
I know our friend Larry cool. Irby really, really loved
Larry's
it.
Loving it. Yeah.
But what do you think, since we often either disagree with each other or agree with each other, which I guess is always going to be that, but me and Lee, are we there with you, or do we disagree with you?
Well, spoiler alert, I know you're there with me a little bit. I'm not sure about Lee. I'm not sure how you felt about this one. How did you feel?
I think we're all simpatico.
Oh, man.
We're kind of, hey, there's some good bits to this, but.
Yeah, so the way I'm going to divide this up, instead of just going scene by scene, I want to talk about the memory TARDIS. Then I want to talk about the woman on the planet. Then Sutek. Then I have something to talk about the Doctor, Mrs. Flood. And then we will do the reveal at the very end. So let's talk about the memory TARDIS. Clarence, memory TARDIS, what did you think of the memory TARDIS overall?
So I didn't really see any of the tales of the TARDIS. I've seen a few clips of it. So I know what the memory TARDIS looks like because I've seen it on there. That being said, I hated it. I think I've called it the clown TARDIS. don't beat me up. Don't beat me up, please. I'm just. But why? Why?
Send your hate mail to Clarence at Discussing Network.
What sense does it make? Yeah. Really? What? It exists in this memory from this time window, and they can travel in it, mm-hmm. go to different places, mm-hmm. but it's still fully functional. I think it's mm-hmm. a cool kind of nod to the fans for the trinkets and things that are within it, of course. But as far as the logic of the story, I didn't really love it.
All right, Kirsty, really quick, what do you think of the memory TARDIS?
Really quick, and you start with this one. I absolutely adored it. I watched all the Tales from the TARDIS, and it's always been that, like, well, is this canon or is it not? And now, you know what? I won't swear on this one. It's flipping canon. It's canon, damn it. I absolutely adore it.
What did you love about it?
It was one of those things. It's like they created this little space where they could like refresh these stories, and it then being kind of given life within the show. Mm. And so now I just, when the Doctor kissed goodbye to it, it kind of wandered the universe. And every now and then when it needs refueling, it picks up an old companion or two.
Okay.
And they sit around and they talk about the old times. And there's a romantic part of me that just absolutely loves that. And Mel grabbing the Sixth Doctor's coat and holding it like that, just...
Yeah.
That's yeah. why.
Do you think that was fueled by having seen the... Did you see the Tale of the TARDIS?
Yeah, I saw those and I thought that thing was adorable. I thought the whole set was adorable then. And the sheer fact that Russell has now just kind of made it canon within the show itself. Right. Is just really, to me, it's adorable. It's great because the way of introducing kids to Doctor Who through that little medium and other people to the classics, I think is great. And the fact that it marries it right into the show and makes it a part of it, then I think it's all for the best.
All right, Lee, what do you think? What did you think of the memory TARDIS?
I'm torn. I did think it was adorable, and I love that moment of Mel and the Sixth Doctor's coat and things like that. But, you know, I am more of a harder SF person, and so I'm always going to have this problem with science fantasy, like Doctor Who. We might as well call it what it is. Right. I mean, because I'm saying that TARDIS can't fly. It's not connected to the Eye of Harmony. I want things to operate by the rules that we've been taught. You know, so, well, it remembers the Eye of Harmony. No, that's come on. It's, you know, I'm just, even though this is an outrageously fantastic universe that this show takes place in, I still feel like there are times when we cross the line. And I just want to say, oh, now that's just silly. You don't make a TARDIS by hitting a TARDIS with a hammer. That's not how TARDIS, I don't know how TARDISes are made, but that's not it. I know that's not how it is. So
I've seen plenty of doctors hitting TARDISes with hammers.
Yeah, and you didn't get another TARDIS.
And you didn't get another TARDIS. Well, I'm going to bring up
they were hitting it on the inside, I should say.
Well, that's true.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Console. That is true.
How many were popping out when David Tennant was hitting it?
That is true. So for me, I really liked the memory TARDIS. Mm. I like the fact that we saw the memory TARDIS before this episode. So I really think this episode had the TARDIS in it. And he got, remember, the Tales of the TARDIS was something that he came up with at the last minute. So I'm thinking he just took that set and took the idea for Tales of the TARDIS because he wanted something else for the 60th with the set that they had already used for this episode. Mm-hmm. So technically, I think it came first in the episode and then Tales of the TARDIS. But that being said, what I didn't like about it, I didn't mind the old nods and I didn't question, you know, how did it fly, even though that does totally make sense. What didn't make sense to me is it was keyed to Ruby's memories because he says at one point, keep thinking about the TARDIS, keep remembering the TARDIS. Well, if that be the case, why didn't it look like the TARDIS that we have today? Why did it have the other things? And why wasn't he the one remembering? Because you would think it would make a lot more sense if he was the one that was remembering.
That's true. Those aren't her memories. That's a very good, yeah. If we're going to take this seriously at all, that, yeah.
I think in watching it back, that was the thing that would be missing. It's like, I think if the Doctor had rallied himself, Mel, and Ruby and said, we all have to remember the TARDIS, that would have actually just, you know, expanded like what he found when he walked in the door. But he specifically says, Ruby, this is going off of your memory. I'm like, yeah. I think that just switched that line. And it would have been a great way to engage Mel and say, Mel, come on, remember your times in the TARDIS. Ooh. That would have been, it would have.
Yeah. And then Mel would have gone in and seen.
Right.
She would have seen exactly what she expected.
And then straight to the coat. And that would have been like, yeah, that would have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only thing I could see that they would, it just would have. Yeah. It would have helped a lot if it was going off of more memories than hers. Yep. Fixed it for you. Thanks, Russell. I'll send me the check.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to know what you guys think. And Clarence, I'm going to point this one to you first. The woman on the planet. Thoughts about the woman on the planet, if any.
Help me out. Who's the woman on the planet? I don't even remember that.
The woman that gave him the spoon.
The kind
spoon.
The kind woman who gave the spoon.
I felt like, what show are we watching here? And what happened to Doctor Who for me? No, really, I was just confused. Now, maybe you guys know more to the story, but to me, it was just done for a touch point at the end of the episode where we see the woman again and her baby is back. But I don't know, because for me, it took me completely out of the story. They could have cut that totally and it wouldn't have made any difference in the story to me. What did you guys think?
Lee?
I agree. I just thought, what, why are we doing this? What's happening? But. If there has to be a reason, if that isn't just a stupid wandering off the script kind of thing, stupid is actually not contributing to the main storyline.
Right.
Then there's got to be a reason. And then my theory is that is or will be the Doctor's daughter-in-law, and the baby in the crib is Susan.
Oh boy, now you're breaking my brain. Don't do that to me. Don't.
it's nothing other than a cheaply added in scene. Not that there's anything wrong with this, because it's a lovely play team between the two of them to show the effect outside of, because we see this cloud chasing everybody. We see what happens inside of UNIT, and then they take off in the TARDIS. We don't get to see any impact anywhere else. And so it's the Doctor going to another planet and seeing the devastation, basically, of everybody dying everywhere at all time. It creates this vacuum of memory because this person now no longer existed in their timeline. And so it was a way of trying to do that. But unfortunately, it's like, I don't know if other stuff from that bit got cut. Like, why metal? Why did it have to be metal? Why was metal in scarce supply? You know, there was too many unanswered things from that to flesh out. But it was a lovely, lovely played and touching scene, especially when she's like, oh my goodness, I think I forgot that my daughter died. And it was just like, it was so very sad. And I'm just like, yeah, because it's like, yeah, she just forgot now about her daughter because her daughter died before.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I agree totally with Lee. I think that this was intentional. You know, I hope this is intentional, because otherwise I think it was a missed opportunity or a why waste our time kind of thing, kind of like what Clarence said. But this was the scene that literally just started making me start not liking this episode, because the way RTD and the official Doctor Who podcast the week before on YouTube is playing it up. He says, and a kind woman on a distant planet is holding with something vital. And the way he said that made the hair on my arm stand up, thinking, Susan, we're going to see Susan, not a clip of Susan, but Susan. And then whenever I see this woman, whether that baby was Susan or not, or that's his daughter, or that's his daughter, I mean, law or whoever, it was like, really? Come on. That was my thought.
In the chat, several people have used the expression, pull the rug out from under us. And I think that's a fair criticism. I still enjoyed this, but it does feel like a lot of this season was about, RTD saying, wait for it, it's coming. And just kidding.
Okay.
And so, I can see what people are saying. I don't care for that. I feel like I'm being made fun of a little bit.
All right. So let me go ahead then and pose one of the questions that I had about the reveal, which is, does this present a conundrum for RTD in that we no longer trust in the hints? Will we be less likely to speculate who Mrs. Flood is because now we're burned, no pun intended, by this?
That's a discovery joke. Yeah. I'm seeing that in the chat here too. People saying, you know what? The whole thing about Mrs. Flood, I got to the end and I realized I don't care anymore. Yep. I really don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to keep doing that, I'm like, oh, cool. There's another little mystery still that we've got going on. It's cool. That's a good spirit.
And I'm, Lord knows, I'm one of the people that's, you know, left, right, and center down the aisle of being trying to be positive. You know, thank goodness it's not Chibnall. You know, I got to at least be honest and say I wasn't that positive there. But again, is this a conundrum? Do we trust? Kirsty, I believe you're saying you do still trust in whatever spoilers might be happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like I said, having the rug pulled out from under me is a good thing. When it comes to TV, I am always trying to guess what's going on. I'm very annoying to watch TV with because I'll be like, because I'm trying to figure it out. And to be kind of fooled and in a nice way in this one, I'm totally on board, especially because I found RTD to be a little predictable prior. And here he is playing against the predictabilities, if you ask me. And I find that refreshing rather than just going back to the same old pattern.
All right. So then before I go to Clarence and Lee, I want to ask you a question. Why did it snow?
That's on my list of questions,
no
too.
Sense.
Why you had the rug pulled out, but why did it snow?
Yeah. If she's perfectly ordinary and so is her mom.
Why did it snow?
Her birth mother, I may say.
So really, why did it snow?
The really bad technology that they have at UNIT is the reason why they weren't supposed to be using the time window. And because they use the time window, it actually infected that port. So every time that they concentrated on that time period, snow would fall because they would link with the time window.
So what about when they weren't at the unit?
No, anywhere in time and space. Because
they were linked to that event through the time window because the time window is bad time technology. It's not good, clean time technology that they're playing with.
You need a creative mind like Kirsty's. Yeah. This is as simple as it is. Now you've got an explanation, and I buy it.
Lee likes his explanations.
I've been writing fantasy and science fiction for a long time, and I can tell you, this is all you have to do is say, here's why that happened. It can be total bull, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. Clarence Brown, I have a question for you. Right up there with the snow.
Yeah.
The sign. Ruby Road, naming Ruby. Your thoughts point at the sign.
Everybody do it.
If you think of the actual situation, it makes some sense, you know. But really, and not only the point, but let's look at the rather roguish, I don't know how you explain, the clothes the mother was wearing, and I don't even know if the build of the person who's supposed to be the mother looks the same. It just looks like somebody different and wearing these clothes that, okay, obviously you're going to hide yourself if you're leaving the baby on the doorstep. You don't want other people to know who you are. That kind of makes some sense. Yeah. But
and it's cold.
You're just like, I don't know, man. I didn't buy it. And then the pointing to, it seems like they would have been able to figure that out when they were in the time window. But I don't know, man. It just was a lot of a matter of fact type stuff to me with that explanation.
So, Lee, pointing at the sign. I have a question about pointing at the sign, but I want to know what you think.
That was one of the things that sort of took me out of it. I'm like, well, who besides Death Eaters points like that? if that's just Ruby's real birth mom, then... why is she doing that?
Yeah, it was
except to create this Easter egg. I didn't mind.
And while I'm the one who's been trying to patch holes and things for RTD, this one was a little bit on the nose for me, because it's like in silence, pointing it at a sign doesn't say the child that I just dropped off that door over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the name I want to go with. That right. one there. See her there. I think there's a lot of pointing needs to be done. It's like, exactly. See the baby. I want to call her that.
And tying yeah. right into that is what Janet Hall says. I laughed when that was the explanation. Who was there to see it? She's already dropped the baby at the step. She's walking away. Her yes. staring and standing at Ruby Road sign tells no one the name of the baby.
And as Nicole is saying in the chat, if you want that to be the name of the baby you're leaving in a basket, put a note in the basket.
Yeah. Oh, I don't have a
post-it note. All of that is brilliant.
Oh, I don't have a post-it.
Yeah. Where I came out here without a pen.
And she has to
somewhere.
And she also says she's not sure that a 15-year-old would be so dramatic in a cloak like that.
Yeah. Maybe she's into Renaissance fair stuff. Yeah. So yeah, she's a
She's game for the Ren Fair.
Totally goth mom who's
and there's just
go ahead, Claire.
And I was just gonna mention you mentioned about subverting expectations, which this episode does a lot of. We're calling out all the points on that. It's just unfortunate, because don't lead us down this road. At least let one person's theory be right, as I think Tasha pointed out in our chat over here. I don't think anybody could have guessed this. Maybe some people did, but don't build me up like it's going to be, and I'm going to go back to Rian Johnson from The Last Jedi, don't build me up like it's going to be something spectacular, and then just for the sake of subverting expectations, that's what you're doing. And maybe there's more to the story. He did mention in the podcast interview that wait till Christmas, there's more to Ruby's story. So maybe we haven't heard the last of it. We don't know what's going on with the dad. There could be more things to this that we're just not privy to at this moment.
Yeah. And Clarence, I think you have hit it spot on. You know, we're kind of dissecting this and kind of hem-hawing back and forth, saying we didn't like this, or this really wasn't this, and this doesn't make any sense. Maybe it doesn't make sense on purpose. Maybe the doctor saying she pointed to the sign was rule number one, the doctor lies. Because go ahead, Lee.
And as someone had pointed out in the chat too, that it's also only happening in the time window. That didn't happen when he visited it in real time.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
True.
Well, Ms. Powell said in the chat, the mom pointed because she saw them in the time window.
That's what I'm saying.
The doctor's memory changed. So right. I think there's a lot. I kind of wonder if there was more to the time window that we didn't see.
Well,
explanation of time window and why it's bad and whatever. And, it just seems like, they kind of glossed over the fact that it was
interesting. Yeah.
Well, maybe they need to get out their time decks and clean their window.
Right. Yeah. They got some schmutz on there. It keeps falling all over the place.
So since we're talking about the mom, what were your thoughts? And Kirsty, I'll start with you. The fact that the mom wasn't a supernatural being, wasn't a time lord, wasn't fill in the blank, Mrs. Flood, whomever. Thoughts of mom being ordinary mom.
Absolutely loved it. Totally tired of Impossible Girls and River Song's mom traveling with the doctor. They're all these ultra important companions, and here we just get a companion who has a very, very important thing for her, which is finding her birth mom, which seems to be this impossible thing. And to get this kind of payoff at the end after the adventure was really cool, especially with that being central to her storyline. We actually get a proper kind of payoff to that, and this we can't ever imagine why we would leave the doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you got a chance to travel with the doctor, what would make you want to leave? And I'm like, Yeah. I find the ending and finding her mom is just perfect. Of like, no, this is so much more important than traveling with the doctor, is to you know, to meet my mom. And yeah, I it made me cry.
Nothing wrong with that. I've cried many a time. All right, Lee, what did you think of the mom reveal?
I was expecting a twist. No pun. just that I thought that there was going to be some kind of a big cosmic thing, and Ruby was frightened of that being true. So I was glad that that turned out to not be true. And I kind of liked that idea. My only fear was that then the doctor was going to say to Ruby's mom, because you are the most important person in the entire universe, because I'd had enough of that before. And, it is. It's a nice, well, Harold Katz in the chat is saying it's kind of a Band-Aid. It's a nice temporary wrap up to Ruby's story. Mm-hmm. That is what she wanted more than anything else. As somebody who has adopted, I'd just like to mention that somebody else in the chat earlier, I think it was Nicole, said it does kind of sting when she says she's looking for her real mom. Pardon me, but Carla is her real mom. She was her mother.
Correct. Correct.
She's been her mother her whole life. My son and I used to joke about the other guy being a sperm donor. You know, that's. Mm.
He may have been the father, but you were the dad.
I was the dad. Yeah. He's the biological reason you exist. But yeah, my son knows I'm his dad. So yeah, that just seemed like kind of an unfortunate slip. Right. And it's in the script, I'm sure. It's like, hey, I don't think she would say to the woman who raised her, I'm looking for my real mother.
Yes.
Unless she meant to hurt her. And I don't think she would. So that was too bad.
All right, Clarence, what did you think of the reveal of the mom?
I agree with everything everyone has said. It is definitely something beautiful about that. Even though I might have misgivings about, you know, the revelation of what happened at that church on Ruby Road. I do think this is a beautiful conclusion to the story. You know, you can't deny that. And, you know, it's good for Ruby. But, you know, I agree also with the things that Lee said. You have her mother that's been raising her for the past 20 years as well. So, yeah, it was good to see them all together at the end.
Yes, I give them credit for doing that very much.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah. So my thought was, if I were in control of that particular story, maybe what I would have done to adjust it just a little bit is, after he went in the church on Ruby Road, he tries to take her back. Instead of saying, I'm never taking you back, you know, that's one place we can't go, he actually tries to take her back to Ruby Road, can't take her back to Ruby Road simply because it's time locked for some reason. Mm-hmm. And they spend the season not having this mystery snow and this fantastical memory of seeing this hooded figure, is trying to figure out why we can't go back to Ruby Road to see the mom, and then find out at the end who the mom is. To me, that would have been a much more rewarding payoff, because you wouldn't have built up this fantastical, but you would have still had the wholesome coming together of mother and daughter and family and all of that. You could have still had all of that, but not had the, as I think Kirsty said, pulling the rug out from under your feet. I don't like that. I don't like having the rug pulled out from under my feet. You know, give me something and pay it off. Give me nothing and don't pay it off either way, but don't pull the rug. I don't like that.
Yeah. And it also was a good tie into the 73 Yards episode with the DNA blogging of all the citizens. They used that as a key point in the episode. So I thought that was interesting too.
Yeah.
Although I get confused on the Roger Ap-Gwilliam timeline. Because did she just stop him from getting the code, from doing the codes, or did she stop him from doing anything in government? Because he was like, he's the worst prime minister ever. But didn't she just like nip him in the bud right in the beginning?
Yeah.
Right.
But in that timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I think that is a plot hole. No. I,
Yeah. Because the doctor's still talking about like it was a thing that she knows about. And like, yes, that's but that's all right, because
so we're already 45 minutes. So I want to switch to Sutek for a minute, also known as Snoopy Doo or Scooby Doo or Snoopy or whoever you want to call it. All right. So what do we think? And Lee, I want to ask you this first. What do you think of Sutek clinging to the spine of the TARDIS as he evolved into his true godhood since Pyramids of Freaking Mars?
It's one of my problems with this. We are asked to believe now that Sutek has been with us everywhere we've gone since 1975.
Bingo.
What I immediately thought of was when Jack Harkness hung onto the outside of the TARDIS. He was out there with Sutek. If we know Jack, he would have said, hello.
Hello, Sutek.
Well, hello there, Sutek.
I'm open to anything.
Sutek's like, there was some guy who groped me on the TARDIS. What was that?
I'll never forget that.
Oh, that was Captain Jack, sorry.
That happens. Time and a place.
Yeah,
I just don't buy that he's been with us since 1975. I'm sorry.
Clarence, what did you think of Snoopy Doo on the TARDIS in 75?
It's kind of hard to buy, honestly. Waiting in the wings, gaining power.
Yes.
Definitely an interesting place to go. And I think it was when Grace had talked about, was it the Day of the Doctor when all the TARDISes came together?
Yes.
So he had all the Sutek together. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah,
just weirdness, man. That's
it was a Sutek convention.
13 Sutek convention. Well, no, he wouldn't have been on TARDISes 1, 2, and 3. But
okay. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But apart from that,
and you know,
starting to sound like the Citadel of Rex in there.
So Janet Hall says in the chat, "Think of how many times the TARDIS has blown up."
Yeah,
totally true.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So Kirsty, what did you think of having the TARDIS be with Sutek since 75?
I actually kind of like the idea, because here was I like, oh, at what point did it happen? Was it during the David Tennant specials? Was it during which episode did Sutek arrive on the scene? And it's just like, no, he's been there since then. And that's kind of creepy and cool. I kind of like the fact that the Doctor thought he vanquished him, and no, he lingered and just kind of clung on for dear life. And God knows how long he, had to sit there before he got enough power. But I just like the fact that it wasn't something that we were supposed to have seen in the past, 10 episodes. And that it was actually something from the history of the show. And again, it tied in to the Pyramids of Mars, which they released as Tales of the TARDIS, which again is bringing new audiences into the classic show. So I'm all for this kind of wrapping that basically now when people go back and watch episodes of Doctor Who, they're like, oh my God, Sutek was there and dumped off a little minion. It's kind of cool in a creepy way to look back at the show and go, oh, Sutek was there. You could have a whole new postcard series for Doctor Who, like all these things from Doctor Who. Was like,
Sutek was here.
Yeah.
Well, Kilroy. Sutek. Blackpool.
So Sutek, Miss Powell family says Sutek should have just latched on at Wild Blue Yonder. And that's at the end of the universe. And the Susan twist first showed up in Wild Blue Yonder. Totally agree with that. That would have worked with me.
I would have bought that instead. Yeah.
This is the first time we've disagreed, Ms. Powell. I can't believe it. I thought also,
is it worth mentioning, going back to the magic hammer, that this isn't the same TARDIS?
That's what I was about to say. So is there now two Suteks on each TARDIS? Do we duplicate a Sutek?
You see? No. You get a magic hammer, and this is why you have to be worthy.
So Nicole also brings up, did he shrink down in flatline? He became scrappy Sutek.
There was an itty bitty Sutek that would go in Clara's purse.
Sutek power. All right. So since we're talking about what Sutek did, what did you guys think of the Doctor's anger? That scene where he just lashes out. Clarence, the Doctor's anger, lashing out. What did you think?
I mean, Shooty is always great. I don't know if I can go much beyond that. Any specifics of that you wanted to,
Just in general.
I mean, Shooty, he's great in all these emotional moments. So I found that that was a great scene for him.
All right. Lee?
Same thing. Yeah, just say, that's what we've come to expect. When you need to reach down inside yourself and show us a bare nerve, he can do it.
Right.
Kirsty, what do you think?
Yeah, too many times. I mean, you think a lot of his stuff is like Tennant in a way of he's like kind of manic and stuff. But and Tennant would get mad, but like he'd boil and seethe. But this Doctor is just like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about you're screaming out into the void. That's practically it. I mean, what do you do when the universe has just died? You just,
yeah.
And I'm here for it because there's. He is our hero and our superhero, but we also have to see him dealing with things and like how serious it is. And you don't get that if the Doctor just looks sullenly out into space and goes, oh, well, everything died. You need to see like how hard that is for him. You
know? True. Well, one of the things that I appreciated in this was seeing Mel again. I mean, Bonnie Langford again knocks it out of the park, in my opinion.
Excellent.
Especially dead Bonnie Langford as the Zootech minion.
She did such a good job.
She was awesome. And I feel so bad about now talking about Screaming Mel when we reviewed originally.
She has been.
Screaming Mel is still
she's still Screaming Mel.
She's fantastic.
But it's nice to see that she's moved past the screaming.
She's fantastic.
And being a real fantastic. Yes.
Well, essentially, I always like to correct people on that. It's not that she's moved past it. It's that the writers have moved past writing Mel in that way.
True,
she's
but the character.
She's only responsible for playing the part she is given. And too much has been put on that woman over the years for the screaming, which she was scripted to do. Sorry.
All right. True. Very, very true. All right. So we have gone through the reveal, we've gone through the woman on the planet, Zootech, the Doctor. Before we end on Zootech, what did you guys think of the resolution of Zootech, of taking him on a leash through the time vortex? Clarence, you're laughing. What did you think?
You know what? You could have problems with it, but I just thought it was fun. In as much as we're talking about the things we don't like about this episode, there were a lot of things just looked very cinematic and visually were kind of interesting. Now, you can probably complain about this vortex scene that, you know, he's just pulling Zootech around on a leash. But I thought it was fun. I thought it looked interesting and it was well done. And I had a little bit of problem with some of the words the Doctor was saying during this time, because to me it didn't make sense. Death plus death. It's like, anyway, but I thought it was a fun scene in Vortex with Zootech. So, yeah.
Okay, Lee, what say you?
The same. I just really enjoyed that. Hang the sense of it all. But I just, you know, this is somebody who is evil incarnate, and I really wanted to see him punished. And so dragging him through all of space and time is hilarious. So,
Kirsty,
but yeah, death plus death equals life. Yeah, I got that problem too. He's also been creating Susan twists everywhere we go. I thought he was a god of death.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, whatever. Mm.
Kirsty, what do you think?
I thought it was great. The death plus death, the death of death brings life, because if you kill death and death no longer has the effect, then you bring life. But yeah, I actually love the simplicity of the no buttons were pressed, no switches were flicked, no, you know, the Doctor falling over controls and everything to fool somebody. They just faked him out as God, who was all powerful, and he stopped for a minute to try and figure out something, and she faked him out and they hooked him. And yeah, it was a good Doctor. It was the way Tom Baker would have done it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Tom Baker, I love the fact of the memory TARDIS showing us the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane in story. I really, really like that. And when Sutekh attacked the 15th Doctor, the energy was green, just as it was with attacking the Fourth Doctor. I thought that was a good nod. What I was actually thinking when Sutekh was flying through the vortex, you know, on the rope, I was thinking all of my friends who are animal lovers are just going to be saying, but the poor doggy, because it did look like, you know, the way the graphic looked, it looked very dog-like posture, sort of, as it was flying through and doing all of that. But yeah, I thought that that was really, really, really
cool. Would you like to have seen the old Sutekh design in this episode?
I think I kind of would. That's a very excellent question. Hmm. Would you have liked to have seen it?
Well, I'm going to ask the classic people on here.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I kind of did too. That I would have liked a version of it that was more articulate, that was more, had more range of animation. But to be nerdy about the mythology for a minute, Sutekh is his own thing. He's not a dog. He's not a jackal. He's depicted in hieroglyphs as a lot of different things, but what he is archaeologists call him the Sutekh beast, because there's no other, he just is what he is. So, but he does look like a dog, yeah. Or a jackal, or a wolf, kind of, or a rat-like fox, or a rat, or yeah.
I think a little kind of visual check with it would have been kind of cool. Like when, if one of the minions had, like, taking on that rather than the kind of little mask that they had, I think if it had looked a little more kind of like that, that would have probably satisfied some of the older fans. But
I mean,
it was kind of cool, but that mask in Pyramids of Mars, it doesn't make logical sense because Sutekh's head is way small. It's like, what the heck is like that? Because they put it on somebody's body, and it's just like,
yeah, that, no, that I could have gone right with. I think so. Clarence, would you have rather have seen the mask?
I wanted true Dragon Ball Z style of transformation to its true form. I think that would have been kind of cool.
Agreed. So everybody comes back at the end, and the story wraps up. We've already talked about the mom. Did any of you pick up something with Kate when she returned? Did anybody pick up a vibe going on with Kate?
A vibe?
Is it an idea?
Yes. Her and Colonel Ibrahim have this look.
Oh.
And then they have this holding hands moment.
Yes,
they're actually
holding
end.
Hands at the end. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Not a twist. Sexy. There's a hand holding at the
sexy.
End.
Yeah. Calm down, this power.
Yes. That is it. I just thought that was cool. And of course, it seems like the proverbial line.
Just be happy they're alive again. Yeah. I mean,
Well, yeah.
It's still at the moment.
One of the things that I always enjoy about seeing Kate is that line, I think you could come to work for UNIT.
Yeah.
She's always recruiting. God. She's like a the unit vampire. It's like, ooh, you've got tech skills, want to come work for me?
So as we're getting...
We do go through unit people pretty fast, though.
That is true, too.
So,
yeah, poor Arbinger.
So before we get into our favorites, before we say night-night to this discussion, I want to bring in, and Lee, I'm going to point this one to you, Mrs. Flood at the end with her white attire thoughts.
I don't care anymore.
Okay.
I really don't.
See, and this is what happens. Exactly.
Yeah. I do. She's the one, the plot thread about which I just feel yanked around. I don't know.
Clarence?
Everything Lee said.
Kirsty, really quick before we get into our favorites.
I still Mrs. think we're in this kind of land of mystery kind of thing going on now that even though Sutekh's gone. And so, yeah, it's just a teaser for season two. So I'm all for it.
So here's what I'm hoping is I'm really hoping that by the end of season two, we will get into this idea of, wow, he really surprised us and comes back and answers all the mm-hmm. questions, and we can say, oh, RTD, you really were that brilliant.
Well, he said that this season as we were going through the episodes.
That was before he pulled the, but he didn't quite pull it out as, you know, some other people have. But favorite
scene. But you're right, there's still time.
There's still time. Yeah. Favorite scene.
Can I bring up something else before we do favorites?
Absolutely. You can always bring up something else.
Thank you. The Vlinks. What exactly does the Vlinks do?
Look really cool.
Is it a machine?
Sells toys and it's good for the kids? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Apart from being a collectible. Well, I thought it was a machine. And at the end, it turned to dust and then we brought it back again when we said that life brings life. And it didn't destroy everything. It just killed people. So Vlinks is alive?
Well, his head fell off, but then his head was miraculously popped back on.
Yeah.
He might be biomechanoid.
Everybody's clothes came back.
The biological component turned to dust. If you're looking for an explanation, I've got them all in this bag down here. I just keep pulling them out.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodness. I just wanted to bring that up about the Vlinks. And also, just a shout out very quickly in a meta way, Gabriel Wolf was the voice of Sutek in 1975. Yeah. And by golly, he's the voice of Sutek in 2024.
And I don't know if we said this last time, but his nod in the last episode when Ruby's mom, her mom that has raised her mom, actually says it's the Beast, which he also played the Beast, the voice of the Beast in the Satan Pit. So I thought that was a good nod.
That's right. Yeah. I know that voice is Satan.
Lee, I'm going to stick with you. Favorite scene.
Oh, I just love dragging Sutek through this time vortex. There's sparks flying off him. It's funny.
I did too. All right, Clarence, favorite scene.
I like that one as well, but I'm going to point out when we actually, the whistle was blown and the console of the TARDIS shoots out this beam and grabs Sutek and they're off on their way. I thought that was pretty fun. And also, wasn't Ruby dressed a lot like the Doctor's daughter in that scene?
Oh, yeah. That's a good, yeah.
She was in fatigues and stuff and
Which they changed clothes, and I don't know when it happened. They just kind of go back and forth for clothes.
Yeah,
yeah. They were in the memory TARDIS. I think maybe she just had a different top on in the memory TARDIS. I think she had like a cardigan on top.
Mm.
Because I'm like, they did not have a change of clothes in their memory TARDIS.
So, Kirsty, what was your favorite scene?
That one's difficult. I'm going to say just the memory TARDIS, just because, because I'm old. And I'm an old Doctor Who fan, and it tugs at every freaking heartstring, and I adored it.
All right. So for me, my favorite scene was the Doctor's anger. I just love how Bonnie Lankford and Millie Gibson played their parts of, coming to his aid. I like the fact that RTD has made this a more expressive incarnation of the Doctor, whether it's sadness, whether it's happy, whether it's anger, I'm all for it. So I really enjoyed it. And I've never seen the Doctor be that upset in, all my years of watching it. And so that for me was my favorite scene. So favorite quote, Clarence, I'm going to start with you. Favorite quote.
Mine is going to be from that vortex scene. And also the quote I said, doesn't make much sense to me. But Ms. Powell put a comment in here, and I'll read after I finish. But the doctor said, you saw all the time and space with me, Sutek. So I thought, what if you see it again? What happens if you bring death to death? You bring life. To which I was like, well, okay. But we got a comment here from Ms. Powell. I think I have it bookmarked. She says that it's like revelations in the Bible that the last enemy to be destroyed is death. So,
yeah, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Cool.
All right. So, and I am so sorry, but I am losing my train here. Are we on our favorite quotes now?
Favorite quote.
Yes.
And I went first.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. Lee, favorite quote.
Since I am also very old and an old Doctor Who fan, I still just love the fact that in Robot, the first Fourth Doctor episode, that they unit guys come out and they shoot, bang, 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 no effect. And Brigadier says, you know, just once, I'd like to meet an alien menace that wasn't immune to bullets. It's one of the great Brigadier moments. Well, in this episode, Kate has exactly the same, his daughter has exactly the same thing, bam, 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 nothing. And she says, oh, one day.
Yeah. He says, although all the bullets have turned, will just turn to dust.
Like, bullets turn to dust. Oh, one day. I know. I know what the rest of that sentence is. One day. I loved it.
All right, Kirsty, favorite quote.
Jump on, cowboy.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love that. And just to tag on to that too, Bonnie mentioned in the commentary that she thinks it's a great scene, that whole scene, because. When they did, what was the Seventh Doctor episode at the camp?
You get me.
Yeah.
But Sylvester had to start and ride a motorbike, and he could never get it right. And so she says, "This is great because now I'm riding the motorbike for the Doctor." So yeah, sorry.
That was all right. So I'm going to ask the chat real quick before I give my favorite quote. If you will give your ratings from 1 to 5 as we start our ratings, if you want to go ahead and start giving your ratings. But my favorite quote was, "It happened over and over again." 1999, 1066, 2005. The Earth is dying in time and space. I did this. Every sun is dead. The universe has come to a halt, and it is my fault, because I traveled to all those worlds, and I thought it was fun. That was my favorite quote. So final rating, really quick. Kirsty, final rating.
4.5 out of 5.
All right. 4.5 whats out of five?
4.5 piles of sand.
Ah, got you. 4.5 piles of sand.
I don't know who they are, but we'll find out that later.
All right, Lee, final rating.
Oh, 4 out of 5 rounds rapid.
Clarence Brown.
I'm going to give it 3.5 energy beams shooting out of the TARDIS console.
Yeah, baby.
All right. I'm going to give it... I would have given this, even with the reveal, if we would have seen Susan, I would have given it a 5. But I'm going to give it, because I felt denied of Susan, I'm going to give it 3.5. Why the hell didn't you give me Susan's out of 5?
What the hell is going on here?
What the hell is going on here? All right, so let's see what our friends in the chat say. After the snap, Tasha says, 3 out of 5 red herrings. Miss Powell family says 4 out of 5 for the season, 3.5 out of 5 for this episode. Lei Jin says 3, more barks than bites, out of 5.
See what you did there.
Nice.
Harold Kett says 3 Sutek leashes out of 5. Our friend Nicole, who I don't think said hi to. So Nicole, if I did at the beginning, I'm going to say it at now. Hello, Nicole. 0.5 out of 5. Hello, Nicole's out of 5. Janet Hall says 2.5 memory TARDIS heartstrings out of 5. Yeah. Wynn Grace says 3 spoons out of 5. Connor Medlin, 1.5 anticlimactic 15-year-old girls in black hoods out of 5. I love that. 3.5 extra sonics in the memory TARDIS from Miss Powell family. Lei Jin laughs. And I think that is it.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Anything else from anyone before we wrap?
All I want to say is I'm going to be terrible. This is just me casting a rumor out there that a scene with Susan's already been filmed for next season, I'm sure. And the only reason why you don't know about it, because it's so hush-hush, because there's only one person you get in to play Susan.
Yep.
Right? I mean, they're not going to just recast Susan. They're going to have her there and then regeneration. Not, they have to. They have to.
Not while Carolyn Ford is in the world.
And still I wants know, to I'm come like, back.
Yeah. So I'm saying the fact that we haven't seen that she's back means she's back.
And if anyone can
the fact
see.
That we don't know.
I'll buy that.
Means that it's going to happen. So there you go. I've given everybody hope out of nothing.
And that's an excellent way to end it. So everyone, go take a nap. Go lie on top of the TARDIS like Snootek. And if you're looking on the video, you can see Clarence's screen showing someone has Sutek looking like Snoopy leaning and on the TARDIS,
sleeping
which
on top,
I think is awesome.
Brilliant.
Oh, that is, yes, that
is very, very cute.
Very, very brilliant.
Snootek.
So everyone that was in the live chat, thank you for chatting. I know I did not bring the chats as much as I have in the past, but with us having a full TARDIS and, well, having the chat, you know, my brain gets overwhelmed. So with that being said, thanks everyone for listening. We are always appreciative. And I have forgotten that 2 weeks in a row. So Lee, what do you always like telling people?
I always like telling people, thank you. We know you got other things you could be doing, but here you are. You spent this time with us, and it wouldn't be the same without you. We are deeply grateful.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And thanks everyone for listening. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.